Get right to it. No dancing around. Our Thursday regular is Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine and of NHL.com, covering all things Canucks beyond the goaltending beat. Mr. Woodley, tell me it's minus 30 and you're miserable in Vancouver too.
Come on, minus 30 in Vancouver. I was going to chirp and say I was out golfing, but we did get a little cold snap here. I think it got to minus 10 overnight, so probably chaos in the streets, people panicking.
That is
a little wind chill and things like that yesterday. Yeah. Like anytime it's even below zero, people freak out around here. So Shangri-La, baby, it's not a bad place to live.
Yeah, all you need is about $3 million for a knockdown house. It's great, eh?
Or you'd be like me. You say you're calling Kevin from Vancouver, but the reality is I'm an hour and a half south of Vancouver. Nobody lives in Vancouver. Come on.
Right. Yeah, that's
the suburbs.
Right. Yes, that's right.
But it's still nice.
It is a lovely city. Its hockey team is never boring, and the fan base has been sharpening pitchforks and getting Molotov cocktails prepared for better be a good four-game set against the Flames, or else, I suppose, would be the tenure and take, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And actually, we heard that from the players yesterday. Bo Horvat, pretty open. This is make or break time. They've lost five in a row. It's pretty clear they're not competitive against Montreal and Toronto, all five of those games. And so, for this team to dig out of the hole that it's created early this season means you have to beat the teams that you're going to be competing with potentially for that fourth spot, in the playoffs out of the North. And that's, Calgary's probably, they see them as, to me, they're sort of a step above. They're probably they end up in that, I'd position them in that three hole. And it's probably more the Edmontons and the Winnipegs is the competition. But at this point, they've got no margin for error. And, it is interesting. They've played 16 games. They played those 16 in the first 27 days of the season. It's not like anybody's had an easy schedule. But you can make a fair argument, and Travis Green made it pretty passionately yesterday, that the schedule has been a big part of the problem here. These past 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday, were the first consecutive days without games for the Vancouver Canucks since the season started on January 13th. They have not had 2 days without games until this, and they're the only team that sort of fits that mold. So you add to the fact that they've got three new pairings on defense. They've got a new goaltender in Holtby trying to get used to things. There's just been, shortened, no preseason, shortened training camp, and just no practice times. Like, it's just a lot of things coming together. And the reality is they're not as good having lost Chris Tanev, having lost Jacob Markstrom. Troy Stetcher gets overlooked in this conversation, although not so much anymore the way things are going defensively. And Tyler Toffoli. This has been as bad as you could envision it, just both in terms of the actual results and in terms of the optics for this management team and for how this fan base feels about this group's chances right now.
So who is under the most fire, or are we more looking at the meme of the dog sipping coffee buried in flames, that everyone's engulfed in it right now?
No, I don't think it. I would say that it's pretty clear to me that the person under the most pressure is probably Jim Benning, the general manager, but I don't know that he can do anything at this point.
Right.
And I think it's fair to point out that above him there are issues as well. And I'm talking about, the mandate from ownership to not spend money. And, it's not just that they let those guys walk. And listen, a lot of people in this market that were saying, hey, like Jacob Markstrom, as much as I know internally they believed he could be this guy till 35 at least, and they know how valuable he was. There are also a lot of people that said, hey, but not 6 over 36, right? Tanev, we've heard some reports about just how disrespected he felt about how it was handled, like no calls, no contact, sort of left to sort of hang in the wind. We'll get back to you after we figure everything else out. But at the same time, the contract he ended up getting, there are a lot of people in this market that are like, yeah, you're they could regret that in a couple of years, because health has been an issue for him up until last season. But now, like, the impact he had, and I think it's not just on the ice, Ryan, it's off the ice. There's something that just sort of feels off about this team, and it's hard to quantify when you're not in the room able to have those little side conversations like you normally do with guys about what's really going on. But, they lost a lot of leadership. Markstrom was a leader as a goaltender for this team. Chris Tanev, you know, was like a dad to a lot of the young players. Troy Stetcher was really tight with, you know, the Elias Pettersson. That's who he spent most of his summer when Pettersson stayed here in Vancouver. That's who he hung with. And then you just add all those together. Like, something's missing sort of in the room, it feels, as well as on the ice. And yeah, so there is a lot of pressure probably on the general manager. And yet, for all those reasons, like, they shed $20 million in actual salary this year. Like, not on the cap, but actual salary. Like, all the decisions seem to be made with the bottom line in order. Mm-hmm. And a lack of willingness to spend more money to get themselves out of, hey, some of their own self-created problems in terms of the cap. And I think that that's come home to roost a little bit here as well. And at the same time, it screams to me that for all the anger and talk of, you know, fire Benning hashtags trending and the pressure on Jim Benning, there's nothing about the way this organization has acted, including the fact their head coach doesn't have a contract extension and neither does their goalie coach. There's nothing about the way they're behaving financially that says, yeah, they're going to fire somebody and pay two people to do the job.
Yeah. Well, they tried that with Tortorella.
Like,
I don't think that was fun, right?
Yeah. This smells like offseason to me if there are going to be big moves made here.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, one last one on Vancouver, and then we'll dig in on more goalie-specific questions. But I don't want to ignore that you've been on this beat for many years, and definitely on when the first of four in a row between the Flames and Canucks, it's probably not a bad use of your time and thoughts here. How has Nate Schmidt been since arriving in Vancouver, and what were you expecting to get when you saw him, the player, in Vegas? He's never been a big point producer, but was talked about very highly amongst the Vegas Golden Knights, and yet I don't know that he's had the same sort of impact in Vancouver yet.
Well, it's been tough to gauge. If you look at the underlying numbers, they're pretty good, actually. For a team that's, you know, bleeding chances in its own end, he's not a big part of that problem. As a matter of fact, he's been one of their better players in that regard. The problem, the perception is that he was this, you know, jump up into the rush, active offensive defenseman. Let's be honest, there's an element of that style and that ability in his game, but as you said, he's not Shea Theodore, right? And the other thing about number one defensemen that put up points is they always do a lot of it on the power play. And so if that was the expectation coming in, it probably should have been tempered, because he was never going to be a first power play unit guy. Yeah. With Quinn Hughes here. He was always going to be a second unit guy, and they've got a first unit that takes up a lot of the 2 minutes every time they've got a man advantage. So that needed to be tempered. He's actually been pretty good five on five. The question, and it was a fair question that was kind of asked coming in, is where did he fit, and how did these pairings shake out? And part of that issue is he's a left shot, and you've got a head coach that likes to play guys on their strong sides defensively, but he has traditionally played the right side. And so he has been asked to play with a number of different partners. He's played the right side, he's played the left side. And again, the underlying numbers are actually pretty flattering to him. So I don't think he's been part of the problem. But it is interesting that you add such a strong personality to a locker room that I just said is missing some former parts. You know, so I imagine there'd be a fit-in process there. And I'm not sure they found him the right partner. They've just jumbled things around. Jordy Benn's now playing the right side, which, I mean, Jordy Benn, when they signed him out of Montreal, everyone you talk to in Montreal, not just media and observers, but like hockey people out of Montreal, said Jordy Benn's better on his right side. Signed him for 2 years, $4 million in the whole first year. Like, you almost never played him on his right side, because the coach has a preference to have guys on their strong side. So adding Nate Schmidt, knowing that was going to be part of the conundrum here, you know, again, probably should have tempered some of those expectations. But when you pull back and look at his overall performance, he's not the problem. Except if your expectations were sort of, you know, point machine, like, you know, point getting machine off the back end, driving play, creating offense. He hasn't been bad in that regard. But the bottom line hasn't been there for him. And, you know, part of that is matchups. Part of that is finding the right mix amongst three new pairings. And it's kind of all gone against him that way. And yet he probably hasn't been a big part of the focal point here in terms of the struggles. And that's probably fair, because he hasn't been the problem.
How should the Flames utilize their netminders in this four-game set against the Canucks, knowing that you don't want to burn out Markstrom, that he's been excellent against his old team, that he'll want to play a bunch, but also that you've hardly allowed David Rittich to play the sport he's being paid to play in the last 11 months?
And that's the balance, right? It's not just – it's going to be tempting, and, you know, Jacob Markstrom is going to want to get rolled out there for all four. He is such a competitive guy that you almost know, like, you never want to say you know, but you just know that's going to be his preference. But you have to remember, it's not just about him and him getting him rolling and keeping him rolling. It's about not losing David Rittich. And so, you know, I don't know that I have the answer in terms of how you should handle it, but I would certainly be hesitant to. And so, when was the last time that David Rittich played? And I apologize, I don't have that right in front of me. How long have we been already?
He played in Winnipeg again and allowed that Forsberg goal. That was the only bad goal. It was
the
second
game
of the year, and he shut the door the final 40 minutes. But it's only his second start.
Yeah. Then so to go another four games over a week without giving him a chance, you think they'd want to work him into one of these, even though it's every second night and Markstrom could probably run the gamut. You have to start looking big picture here. And big picture here is when you need to rest Jacob Markstrom, you need to make sure that you haven't lost David Rittich. And so I would probably try and find him one of these four for sure, even though the temptation, if Markstrom gets rolling, is going to be to just stick with him. I think results will dictate that. I mean, the one thing I used to remember here in Vancouver, and Markstrom's gotten past the point now where this is an issue for him, but they were never hesitant in the early goings of his transformation into the guy you see now. Even last year at the beginning of the season, when you saw things in his game were starting to slip, little details, hitting the post on a reverse VH or in a transition double seal when the play is behind the net, getting up and beating plays to the top of the crease off his post. When the details started to slip, he's a workhorse. They gave him days off, even if they knew the chances of winning were not great, especially 2 years ago with Anders Nilsson, who was going through a tough time in terms of wins and losses at the time. They would go to Nilsson for a game, sometimes even two, to give Jacob that time. So if you're the goalie coach and you see any signs of that slippage, that's when you give him a day off, give Rittich a start, and let Jacob do the work that he doesn't need it anymore like he used to sort of have those resets, because all these elements of his game have become sort of instinctual and really drilled down. There's not as much slippage if he doesn't have that time as there used to be. But if you see any signs of it, give him that time, because he does thrive on that work. And in the process, make sure you're not losing David Rittich as part of this conversation, because you will eventually need him. The schedule will get tougher.
Yep. What has the history been in the last 2-3 years when they've really started to ride Markstrom of his durability and his injuries? Because if I recall, right around the time of the season pause last March, he was dealing with something, and that could have been catastrophic to Vancouver's playoff chances, albeit in good spot, but potentially without Markstrom for a while. That didn't matter. The season was shut down until the bubbles went late summer, right?
Yeah, he was out. I think at that point, Demko had started 4 or 5 in a row, and Jacob was about a week from coming back. He had actually just gotten back on the ice when the season shut down,
okay. Yeah.
Because of a knee issue. It's one of those things where, like, he'll play hurt. This isn't anti-Ranta, and I don't mean to cast this. That's going to come out. Actually, I said that poorly because it casts aspersions on him. But there are some guys where when they feel something, they're not playing. You know, like Jacob played that pretty much that whole playoff bubble. The injury that eventually took him out against Vegas was sustained early in the playoff bubble in practice, and he played through it the whole time. So he's a guy where you have to monitor him because he's going to battle through things and through small things, but. You know, if you let it, eventually you can't play through it. And sort of that's been the MO. He is a guy who will play through things, and you admire that. Because a big part of ability is availability, especially as a number one goaltender. That's a quality you have to do the job the way he does it. But yeah, you have to monitor it, and he plays, you've seen it, right? Like you've seen the dynamic, extended, explosive saves. That's part of who he is. You never want to lose that. But it puts a lot of toll on the body. You're opening up. You're pulling things apart. Like, it puts a lot of stress on the lower body. So, again, like, they'd have sports science people that are watching this, and I'm assuming watching heart rates and practice and all those elements. If you see signs of a small tweak or something like that, then, yeah, you need to find ways to rest him. But he's not a guy that, like, if he comes out for a week or 10 days, you know it's a legitimate injury. And so I don't know how you find that balance, because those injuries tend to be from one-off situations, a save that put him in an awkward spot, a net that isn't drilled properly in a playoff bubble during the practice, like brutal NHL. The net pops off because they didn't actually have proper pegs at the practice rink in Edmonton. Things like that, yeah. As opposed to just wearing him down. So I don't know that you make rest decisions based on injury type situations. I don't know you can run things that way, but it's on him to be honest. If he feels worn down, if you feel fatigued, that's when your muscles are more likely to, you know, give out. You're more likely to put yourself in a situation because of lack of mental sharpness where you need that extra extended save, whereas if you're on top of your game, you don't. But other than that, it's kind of hard to say, yeah, well, he might get injured because he's played a whole bunch. That could happen on the first game of, you know, when he hasn't played a whole bunch. It's not really a wear and tear thing.
Very quickly, because we're out of time, just a thought on Demko and Holtby. Is this just a back and forth until someone allows less than three on a regular basis?
It is. I really do think that my hunch is you'll see Demko tonight, and based on performance. And yet I was really surprised that they ran Braden Holtby. Surprised and not surprised. Essentially, the explanation was for giving Braden Holtby back-to-back was sort of reward for the fire he showed and the leadership he showed, essentially calling JT Miller out for a lack of hustle in the back check, which has been a problem for this team all season, frankly, and JT Miller, you know, number of glaring examples. And they gave him back-to-back starts based on that, less so based on performance. To me, on the whole, Demko's been better, and so I'm expecting Thatcher Demko tonight, and yet, you know, probably not a good sign that you're going to intangibles is the reason you're starting a goaltender 16 games into the season, but they've already gone there once. Probably also not a good sign. We started this conversation talking about where this team is at and salary cap and who the pressure's on. Probably also not a good sign that most of your salary cap problems are because you overspent on bottom-end guys who have quote-unquote character and leadership.
Right.
And your goaltender who's, you know, 2 months into his career with your team is the one actually showing enough leadership to get a start rather than having that start based just purely on performance. So interesting times here, weird times. I wouldn't expect one guy to get a bulk of games unless we get like Demko did a couple weeks ago, just gets on like one of those 970 tears, and they will keep giving him the net. They're at a point now, though, where if one guy does have a game like that, Ryan, I would expect them fully to go back to him, because the margin for error is gone and the kid gloves are off. If you get a guy hot, they're going to ride him as long as they can.
Great chatting. We'll do it again next week.
Okay, thanks.
Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, NHL.com, covering all things Canucks.